Good morning. It looks like my slides might have been a little bit messed up in the conversion process, so I apologize if any of the text spills over like this again, but hopefully it will look good moving forward. So I just want to start, of course, by saying that I do not have any conflicts of interest or financial relationships to disclose, but I, of course, want to acknowledge the generous sources of funding that I received for this work, which is part of my doctoral dissertation, so I also want to acknowledge my dissertation committee and the co-authors on this paper, which is actually going to be published in press. It's in press right now on the December issue of HSR. So I'm sure all of you are very much aware that healthcare costs in the United States are a substantial concern. Healthcare costs comprise a significant portion of our GDP, around 18%, and continue to rise as a portion of that GDP faster than most other industrialized, actually all other industrialized nations. So even with the recent Affordable Care Act, there's definitely been a reduction in some financial expenditures associated with healthcare costs. For example, premiums are still growing, but at a much lesser rate than they have in previous years. So we're starting to see some improvement in terms of healthcare financing, but it's still certainly a substantial concern, not only for policymakers and healthcare practitioners, but very importantly, for families and individuals who are facing healthcare costs and feeling the pinch of, you know, their monthly expenditures and the portion of their monthly expenditures that go towards these healthcare costs. And I think also importantly, when we're thinking about healthcare costs and why it's important, it's not just the stress of dealing with excessive costs, but also the implications for future health and healthcare use. And there's definitely some evidence to suggest that high healthcare costs can be detrimental to future utilization patterns, including causing increases in unmet healthcare need, as well as increases in inappropriate healthcare utilization. So we have a lot of concern for some of the negative downstream outcomes that might be associated with this. It's definitely a broad overview of kind of the policy implications, which I think are definitely very much important, but I also think there's an equally important measurement issue that's kind of underlying this policy question, and I think focusing on this measurement issue is going to be critically important for us to move the policy and the practice forward as well. So the rest of the presentation is going to focus a lot on measurement, but hopefully still keep it in line with the important policy implications. So to clarify about the measurement issue specifically, my question that I sought out to kind of answer as part of my dissertation was, how do we best capture healthcare-related financial burden in a way that makes it actually reflect something that might be associated with downstream adverse health and utilization outcomes? Most typically, the literature relies on this definition using this 10% cut point that says, if your healthcare out-of-pocket costs exceed your family income by 10%, then you're experiencing high financial burden. So this definition actually was originally developed, and actually a fantastic study, but one that was specifically designed to quantify underinsurance, which is an equally important issue, but not quite what I think I'm trying to conceptualize with financial burden. And certainly has been modified through the years to include other definitions. But I think at the end of the day, we really don't have a good understanding of what best defines financial burden, how we can define it specifically with objective data, so that way it's of use for policy applications. So given what I saw as this gap in the literature, I wanted to develop and validate a theoretically based and empirically driven objective measure of financial burden using nationally representative population-based data, specifically focusing on U.S. families with children. And there are a few important components that I wanted to take into consideration when developing this measure. First of all, I wanted it to incorporate what I hypothesized to be an additive relationship between family out-of-pocket costs and income, such that both were important components but did not exist independent of one another, and so you have to consider the additive interaction between the two terms to adequately measure financial burden, and I'll extend on that a little bit more in just a minute. And I also wanted this measure to be able to predict adverse health outcomes, so I wanted to make sure that in the measure development I was incorporating an outcome that would be relevant to practitioners and policymakers, and specifically I chose to focus on delayed or foregone healthcare, specifically due to costs. And I also wanted this measure to be user-friendly. I think it's fine to apply a bunch of advanced statistical techniques to come up with a measure that's really pretty, but if people can't use it, then it's really not going to be very useful. So I wanted to make sure it was robust, but also able to be easily applied. So for my development sample, I relied on data from the National Health Interview Survey, 12 years of NHIS cross-sectional survey measures. So I had just shy of 150,000 families with children from which to base the measure on. And then I also wanted to take a separate validation sample to make sure that the measure was robust and held up in an independent sample. And for that, I used the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, and I had just shy of 20,000 families with children in that validation sample. And both of these samples do represent nationally representative population-based samples, so they're very similar, and I'd be happy to discuss them more in detail for anyone who's interested. So to develop the measure of financial burden, there's two important components, the first of which is family income. And just a quick note, I imposed a $100 floor because it certainly is possible for families to report zero or even negative values of family income. But for the purposes of this measure, we did use a $100 floor. And then out-of-pocket health care costs, which specifically refer to all out-of-pocket spending for medical and dental care in the previous 12 months. And this does not include, the NHIS definition does not include health insurance premiums. So these are things like deductibles, co-payments, co-insurance, anything that's coming directly out-of-pocket except for premium contributions. And all measures of income and costs were summed at the family level and adjusted for inflation to $2,010. So unmet healthcare need was what I used as kind of my primary outcome measure from which to define this novel measure of burden. And really the important point that I want to articulate here is that the NHIS and MEPS both have some very similar questions that assess delayed or foregone healthcare, but they do vary slightly in how they're asked. The NHIS asks broadly, has medical care been delayed or foregone due to cost for anyone in the family? So I think it's really fantastic, but also very broad measure. And then the MEPS asks first a question that says, did you need any medical care? If the answer is yes, then did you have any delayed or foregone medical care? And then if you answer yes to that, they say, please specify what was the primary reason why you delayed or had foregone care. And so we summed some of those reasons together to come up with this cost-related reasons, which included they said they couldn't afford care, the insurance company wouldn't approve, cover, or pay for their care, or that the doctor refused to accept the family's insurance plan. So some subtle substantive differences in how the questions are asked, but I think that it actually can contribute to the validity of the measure, that even though there's some differential between how the questions are asked, the measure still is robust between the two operationalizations. So for the analytic approach, there's a couple kind of steps, and I'm going to go over them briefly, but I think it's also going to be helpful to see this more visually, so I'll reiterate this in just a moment. But for developing the measure, I started by generating predicted probabilities of unmet need using a bivariate tensor product spline. And I chose to use a spline term because, as I previously mentioned, I was really interested in incorporating this additive interaction between income and out-of-pocket costs in a way that hadn't been previously done. And I thought a spline term is the most flexible way to model nonlinear additive interaction effects. After I generated those predictive probabilities, again, I was thinking about making a measure that was user-friendly, and splines, while very pretty and cool, aren't the most user-friendly techniques, so I wanted to perform recursive partitioning to generate an easy-to-operationalize categorical measure of financial burden that could be better applied for policy. And then finally, I apologize again, it's cut off a little bit here, but just did some post hoc pruning of the decision trees generated from recursive partitioning models to be able to figure out what's the best final operationalization of this measure. And then once I had developed the measure, I set out to validate it. So looking at sensitivity, specificity, other measures of accuracy, and then also determining whether or not this measure could actually predict unmet healthcare need as it was designed to do in both the development and the validation samples. So here's my spline term, and I'm definitely a very visual person, so I like to use pictures, and I'll just take a second to orient you to the slide. So both the image on the left and the right actually represent the same results, just the heat map on the right-hand side is if you're looking down on the top of the three-dimensional graph on the left. But really, this is actually much more intuitive than it might look. So really what you're seeing here is on the x-axis, we have family income, annualized family income. And as you move from left to right along the x-axis, you're increasing income, and you're seeing a decrease in burden. I think that makes sense. People with more money have more money to spend on healthcare, and so lower burden associated with their costs. So more green, less financial burden. And as you move up along the y-axis, which is out-of-pocket costs, increase in out-of-pocket costs, more red, higher burden. And so I think also the other important takeaway here is that if there were truly a linear, non-interactive effect here, we'd see a series of straight lines whereby the amount of change in out-of-pocket costs at every level of income resulted in the same change in the predicted probability of unmet need. But I think logically that's not the most realistic situation, so For example, if you're making $80,000 a year, the implications of spending $200 is very different than for a family who is making $40,000 a year. And so this spline term is better able to capture that relative deprivation at different levels of income for the cost that people are spending out of pocket on health care. Again, I apologize. I promise this looked much nicer when I put it together on my computer. And so this is basically just a table that shows how then I took that nice spline term and cut it up into smaller boxes with the recursive partitioning model and said within these smaller boxes, the predicted probability of unmet need is approximately equal, and so we can group them together to make something that's a little bit easier to use and to work with. And so here this shows just the different threshold effects by varying levels of income. So for example, and again, sorry that this got messed up. There was supposed to be a figure here. Not important. Important thing is, again, thinking back to that family that has $80,000, and if they're spending, let's say, 2% of their income on out-of-pocket care, they're going to be in this mid-low burden group, whereas if you're looking at a family that's making $40,000, spending the exact same relative amount, they're actually going to have a mid-high burden. So same relative amount, but differing income levels results in different levels of financial burden, which, again, I think is intuitive and logically seems to better capture what most families are probably experiencing on a daily basis. So now onto the validation. Based on the NHIS sample, we found that just shy of 18% of families reported experiencing any unmet need due to cost. And this is the distribution of our financial burden measure among that sample. And looking at sensitivity and specificity, so compared to the standard cut point, which is that 10% measure that I mentioned previously, the high burden measure, and when I say the high burden measure, so my final operationalization had four levels of financial burden, low, mid, high, and high. And I think for policy, all four categories is maybe nice for research. Policymakers really want to have a hard and fast rule. If you meet this threshold, you receive a subsidy or you receive some assistive service. So across each of those thresholds that I identified with the recursive partitioning model, I said I'm going to dichotomize this and see how this would work in terms of a policy purpose. How well, if we use this threshold to define a policy, would it be able to capture people who are experiencing high financial burden. So using the highest threshold, that high burden, so the least generous subsidy if you're thinking it from a policy perspective, the sensitivity with this new measure is actually about 20 percentage points higher than the standard measure with a very small loss in specificity. And also negative and positive predictive values are also similarly improved with the high burden measure relative to the standard cut point. And also one other important point, I looked at the high burden compared to the standard cut point to look at misclassification. And if you look at that high burden group, only about 62% of these families would be misclassified by the standard cut point. So it says that that 10% threshold might be missing a large swath of families who actually are experiencing clinically significant financial burden. And then here's just looking at the association of the financial burden measure with unmet need. The blue represents the association in NHIS, and the green represents the association in MEPS. So focusing on the top panel, this is the novel measure. We can see a really nice monotonic increasing relationship with the different levels of financial burden in both the NHIS and MEPS. And I think the important difference in the magnitude here is that the NHIS assesses these relationships cross-sectionally, whereas the MEPS, it's a longitudinal assessment. So financial burden is measured in year one, whereas unmet need is measured in year two. So even with that temporal spacing, we still see that monotonic increase, although the relationship is not quite as strong as it is with cross-sectional association. However, using the standard cut point, we definitely don't pick up that finer gradation in the levels of unmet need, and when you look at the MEPS, the standard cut point, in fact, actually doesn't statistically significantly predict unmet need. And again, I think that's primarily due to the large misclassification that's resulting from not taking into account relative deprivation, particularly at lower levels of income. I want to point out a couple important limitations. So as I mentioned very beginning, I was really interested in U.S. families with children. I'm very much interested in pediatric populations, and so that's why I used to develop this measure. And as a result, this measure might not be generalizable to other types of families, particularly families without children. And data are all from self-reported household surveys, and of course subject to all the typical biases associated with that. And healthcare costs and utilization are, of course, interdependent and related over time, and so accounting for that kind of self-fulfilling cycle of spending and utilization outcomes can be difficult, particularly using cross-sectional data as I did with the NHIS. And then finally, there are some differences in the assessment of unmet need between the two surveys. But as I mentioned before, I actually think that this might support the robustness of the measure, that it holds up regardless of what definition of unmet need we do use. Brief summary, successfully generated and validated a novel measure that is predictive of unmet healthcare need and can be easily derived using that handy table that I showed earlier. And then utilization of a 10% cut point may result in substantial misclassification. And I think this has important implications for healthcare reform. Notably, there are out-of-pocket healthcare subsidies that are outlined in the ACA. And again, I apologize, the slide got a little bit hard to see, but these out-of-pocket subsidies are set based on family income levels. But in all cases, the out-of-pocket maximums don't come into play until families have already spent in excess of 10% of their income on out-of-pocket costs. So subsidies, while they're probably fantastic, might be missing some of the people who are experiencing financial burden before they hit that 10% mark. So thanks very much.